Boo members, it's that spectacular time of year again when witches grab their broomsticks and take flight. When ghosts and goblins hunt for a fright, and the moon laughs and whispers, "Tis Halloween night." We are your keepers, Niza
and Frosty.
This year, we've kidnapped and locked away two of our favorite horror enthusiasts, self-taught makeup artist Z Queen, Cynthia Bonner, and returning victim, horror writer Alexander S. Brown. So grab a body and settle in for spooky Halloween.
We have to all win.
No. I just blew it because I made it through that.
Oh.
Did it sound good?
It did.
Okay. Not broom shits. Not broom shit.
You know, that needs to be a hashtag.
Right. Broom shit.
No. That's where, you know, someone's had it shoved up their ass and they're just shitting out the remains.
I was rear ended, said the witch to the cop.
Right. Yeah. All right. We're super excited to have Alex back on the show. And then first timer, Z Queen, Cynthia.
Hey.
Thank you for doing this special with us. It's another Halloween. This is our second year.
I am excited to be on. Thank you guys for having me.
And thank you for having me back. I always love being on your show.
Unfortunately, if everyone has noticed already, there is no little Anna. She's actually sickly and will not be able to join us for our Halloween special. Let's go ahead and do some catch up. I know you guys, we've been promoting your most recent upcoming project. Go ahead and let our listeners know what, if they haven't been listening to our show, we're going to give the mic to you guys and let you talk about it a little bit.
Okay, well, Cynthia Bonner will be working on this project with me, and we have a great cast of people who are going to be behind the camera and in front of the camera. And Mean Spirited is based on my short story, And the Night the Jack-O-Lantern Went Out. It's about a group of kids who visit a serial killer's grave on Halloween night. And pretty much not everything is what it seems. And as the story unfolds, you kind of learn that there's some back history there that's really going to be the end of some of the people who are at that cemetery. And with the short story, it was more so PG-13 related. And the script that we have compiled for the short film, which we're looking at hopefully a good 30, 45 minute mark there, we're going to up it. More violence, more backstory, and it is going to have a social message. It's not going to be something where we're standing on a soapbox preaching to the audience, but the story's going to speak for itself. And with this crew, they were familiar with Cynthia's talents, and when they mentioned, "Let's get Cynthia on," I was like, thank you, God. Yes, yes, the Z Queen. And she's going to be pulling off probably some really great effects because we're going to be diving into the subject that she is best at, which is the living dead.
Nice. Did we already find actors for your roles in Mean Spirited already?
Pretty much. We do have the majority of the roles filled. There is two roles that are still available, and they belong to brothers. The only thing we request is that you look like you're about 18, maybe a little bit younger, but you do have to be 18 or older due to the subject matter. And also, you have to be willing to go there. This script is going to push it, so be willing to put on your big boy pants and dive in.
So again, if you are interested, if you're in the Mississippi area and you would like to participate in this project and take a part, one of these two parts, you can go ahead and email what was the website, the email address again?
Let's see. It is meanspiritedcasting@gmail.com.
So meanspiritedcasting@gmail.com. with a 1 to 2 minute monologue in your most recent headshots?
Yes, and also we are accepting new talent. You don't have to be established in multiple movies or anything of the sort. If you have the talent to act, then send us over a monologue. We're going to be doing auditions coming up, and pretty much what we're doing is we're compiling the online auditions we've received, and we're going to narrow it down to in-life auditions. So if you haven't done this before, but you've had the passion to do so, just give it a shot, and we'll see if it's what we're looking for.
We're super excited to hear that you guys are working on this project together. We watched Granny's House when you guys did that together. Was that just kind of like you put it together over the weekend for something fun?
It really was. It was Eccentric Films. That's by Chris Kopsky. Always get his last name wrong. But it's one of those two, Kopsky or Kopesky. But anyway, he's the one who's in charge of Eccentric Films, and he came to me and said that he wanted to do a short that was maybe about 3-5 minutes in length, and he wanted me to get over a paragraph description about what that was going to be. And so we created Granny's House, and I had mentioned to him that I wanted Cynthia in it as well. It was just by fate that Cynthia showed up in the outfit she was in with the pigtails.
She looks super because... cute. I was like, oh, look at her. She's so cute.
No one knew I was doing, like, total redneck with this. They had no clue. And so when Cynthia and the crew pulled up in the yard, they had actually kind of felt a little apprehensive because they were like, who the hell is that? So yes. It ended up working out well, and pretty much what I was hoping to do here was show what some Southerners refer to the South as the New South, not necessarily the Old South. And so that's why we kind of have that little interracial tension between us, where you can tell that the redneck man is checking out her bottom and she's being flirty and stuff. And we wanted the granny to kind of represent the Old South in a way, but also at the same time a symbol of like liberating herself. And so it's all about moving out of the old and going into the new, which is also a representation of how she transforms.
And anyone who wants to watch the short film Granny's House, where can they find it?
You can go to YouTube and type it in. Also, you can go to my website and it'll pull up all the videos, all of my books. It's www.alexandersbrown.com, and that's just a one click to everything.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought Z Queen looked very cute in her little outfit, and I thought that was actually planned. I didn't know she showed up in that. So.
Yes, I have no idea what he wanted me to wear, so I was like, something said put on that shirt, and I was like, okay, put on this shirt, and
there it is. He did very well. It was interesting to see Alex play, you know, that straight male Southern, yes. Southern role. It was like, is this really Alex?
It was good. Very good acting.
Yeah, very good. Very good acting.
Yes, he was so good, and he just looked so different.
Right, and I really actually enjoyed that it was no dialogue, and we still got the message.
Well, thank you. And truth be it, and I'll quit hogging the mic so Cynthia can talk. I'm sorry about that, Cynthia.
But, No.
But truth be it, though, that's kind of how Cynthia and I work. We've been working on a photo project for the last few months, and we're going to progress working on that photo project, and we're going to hopefully do a coffee table book of that in the future. But the way that Cynthia and I work, we're on the same page. A lot of times if I'm thinking something, she's in a similar mindset or vice versa. And I think that's one reason why she and I collaborate so well together, is because we're just so mentally synced when it comes down to horror.
I call him my brother from another mother.
How long have you guys known each other? How did you meet?
We actually met through Chris Kopsky. You and I have known each other for what now, a year, Cynthia?
Yes, it's been a year.
Wow.
So, yeah, we connected that quick.
Only a year?
That's pretty good.
Yes, we clicked.
I would have thought it was longer.
Yeah, I thought it would have been longer because we've known Alex on the show for about a year now. That's crazy.
It was an instant connection. Like, when we first met, it's like, boom. I was like, I like this guy.
That's how friendships work.
Yeah, that's how me and Neza work.
Right.
And I think, like, from a creative stance, it's even so much stronger of a friendship when you have two creators come together, because it makes everything so much easier. When I bring on a project, I try to bring on people who I know already kind of share my same vision, or they're easy to work with.
Right.
We can easily negotiate together versus just bumping heads and getting nowhere.
Right. Same passions and same enthusiasm will make the work fun too.
That's how our ideas coming together and shit.
Right. Well, let's get into some questions, and we'll go ahead and ask Cynthia first. We'll let the lady go first.
Yes.
That's a southern gentleman, right?
Correct. The lady always goes first.
All right, Cynthia. Now, we've seen your work on Instagram and we follow you on Facebook. So we have just a couple questions for you. At what age were you when you first started experimenting with makeup?
Actually, it was like in my mid-20s.
Now, yes. I'm sure if our listeners don't know already, you do a lot of horror-inspired makeup. You do science fiction. I've seen you do more like fairy stuff.
Yes, I've done a Star Trek look, too. I like doing all kinds of stuff. I do cosplay looks, too, so I like to switch it up and do, like, a little something different from horror every now and then.
Right, and I had mentioned in a previous episode that I really enjoyed your Pennywise. The Pennywise one that you did, it freaked me out, but I couldn't stop staring at it. I couldn't stop staring at it, and most of your videos, when I watch them, I sit there, and your film most of the time doesn't have that much sound, and you're just kind of making slow movements, and it's very, like, creepy, and then I sit there and I'm like, okay, any second now she's going to talk. She's going to talk. She's going to sound normal. Got to be okay, because it's not really that scary when she starts talking. So, your videos are mesmerizing is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, what is your personal favorite piece that you've done?
Oh.
Like, do you have one that you would repeat over and over again besides the zombies?
I really liked that Pennywise. Like, I really, really, really liked it.
Yeah.
The way it came out.
It was super cool.
It was better than I expected.
Yeah. I mean, if no one's ever seen it, you need to get on Cynthia's Facebook or Instagram and look at her Pennywise. And, wow, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I'm thinking about cosplaying it at cons. I want to actually just do it.
You definitely
just walk
should.
Around like this.
Definitely should. We know that makeup, I know personally that makeup can be really frustrating when applying it. What do you do when something is just not working out, or how do you fix it? How do you fix your mistakes, or how do you kind of bring yourself back together after being frustrated with makeup?
I'm going to tell y'all, most of those looks I do be like that. They be like, I have, like, an idea in my head, and then when I started doing it, it's like, okay, this is not working. And then something just happens in between just doing a look, and I was like, okay, I'll go this way with it, and then it's like, boom.
Oh, nice, nice. So you just, like, kind of work through it, huh?
Yes.
You're like Bob Ross in a way, where you're taking a mistake and turning it into a happy little bush or a happy little tree, huh?
Yeah.
We're going to put a happy little blood wound
right.
here.
Right. A little happy blood wound
here.
Yeah. Man, I can't even get my eyeliner wing right most of the time. I can't imagine doing makeup, like costume makeup. Oh.
Don't feel bad, because I'm still working on the regular makeup. And it don't always happen the way I want to either, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, that's the next question that I was going to ask you. Do you actually do makeup all the time, or is it just costume makeup?
I do regular makeup, too. Like, not regular makeup. Like, I just do, like, little bruises and cuts and stuff most of the time, too. But regular makeup, that's still not my gift, but I'm working at it.
Yeah.
So it'll get there one day.
So if you only had one utensil that you could use, like you were, let's say you were just out on the street, someone recognized you and said, hey, we need you to do, you know, a zombie makeup. And they only gave you one brush, like, or one item to work with. What would you use?
Ooh, probably clown white.
Clown white? That's actually, I can see that.
Because I can do so much with just clown white by itself.
It'd
be like ridiculous. Like, I can just do with that. If that's all they gave me was clown white, I probably still get them something nice.
All right. Now, on your personal, you know, normal makeup, what's your favorite product to use and why?
I like Meron, and I like, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, but I think it's called Snarzu, something like that. It's a kid's body paint. Yeah, something like that. I don't know if I got the name right, but I love that body paint because it goes on so smooth, and it blends good, and I like the way it makes my body paints pop. Like, they make them look realistic in the way that I want them to. So
nice. Yeah,
those are my preferred one.
Cool. Now we see that you have a daughter. She's your only child?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart, and you have her dress up along with you and go to the store with you. I saw the vampire one.
Oh yeah, she loves it too. When she finally wanted to do something scary, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud.
What was her first scary makeup?
Okay, she likes to watch YouTube, and her favorite indie game was called Emily Wants to Play, and it's about this creepy little doll, and it's got like a pale face with the black hair, and so I was like, okay, I can do that. I said, I'll make you into that, and I'll be like the creepy clown, and there you go. It was like, wow.
Is she getting into scary movies?
Oh, she loves them as much as I do. she loves The Ring. She's like,
oh, nice. Yeah, The Ring was pretty scary as a young kid.
She was only afraid of one movie, and that was Sinister.
The kid coming out of the box. Is that the one with the kid coming out of the box in the middle of the night?
Yeah. She was scared of it when she first watched it, but she was like, mommy, I want to watch this again. And she watched it again. She's like, I'm not scared anymore. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, one final question just for Z-Queen. What advice do you have for the novice makeup artist who is, like, trying to teach themselves? What's the best advice you could give them?
Don't give up. Like, even if it doesn't turn out the way you want to the first time, just keep at it and push yourself. Don't stop.
Yeah, don't stop. Believe in.
Yeah. Hold on to
that. Yeah. Or don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Right?
Yes, because practice. The more you practice, the better you'll get at your craft. Don't stop.
Awesome. Hey, Frosty, did you have any questions? Did I not cover a question that you wanted to ask?
Well, you actually covered the question that I had, which was her advice for first-timers. I do have one, though. Why zombies? Like, why is that the one that spoke to you?
I like zombies because they are so versatile to me. I feel like you could be a zombie in any form. You could be a pretty zombie. You can be a scary zombie. You can just use anything and be a zombie. Like, you could be a zombie of any type form. You could be a biohazard zombie. It's all just different things I can do with a zombie. It's like always a category I can make into a zombie. So I like that it's endless possibilities for a zombie. And I'm just attracted to it. That I can do so much with zombies.
Are you finding yourself collabing with a lot more artists for your makeup in their independent films?
Yes. I'm starting to, like, collab with other makeup artists, and I love it because at one time I was thinking that I was the only makeup artist in my area.
Right.
And so I was like, I want to collab with other artists. I was like, where's the rest of the artists? I was feeling like by myself, like, where's the rest of the artists? And then I finally got to meet someone, and I was like, I'm so happy.
That's awesome. Any other questions, Frosty?
Do you have a favorite serial killer?
Ooh, Freddy.
Oh, she likes Freddy.
I'm a Freddy girl.
You know, growing up, I was a Jason girl, and then I actually still really like Jason.
She likes the silent type.
Right. I do like the strong silent type, don't I, Frosty?
You do. Yeah. I don't know, but But I don't know, what would you think mine is? Because, like, I think I like Chucky. Chucky's mine.
Yeah, that's what, that actually popped in my head. You like the talkative psychopath.
Yeah.
All right, now we can go ahead and get into questions for Alex. Let's go ahead and talk about your most recent project that's going to be published soon, which is Traumatized 2.
All right. Well, I finished up with Traumatized 2 maybe a few weeks ago and got it over to the publisher then. And the thing is, even though I edited over it maybe, oh God, a million times, I'll just throw a million times out there. Now that it's in the publisher's hands, he too has to send it through an editor. And then this is now the process where we're going back and forth about doing the edits. I haven't received the edits back quite yet, but it'll probably be sooner than later. With Traumatized 2, it's going to pick up with a similar intensity to the first one, but it is going to advance into darker levels. It's going to be much more personal than the first book. And with some of the categories that are in there, I do comment on the horrors that we see going on in society. And a lot of times, what I try to do with most of my work is I try to present a subject openly so that people can debate about it. It's not to say one individual is right, another individual is wrong. It simply just presents a topic so you can start thinking. Even with that said, the stories do stand, of course, as stories. You can read them as such, and you might not even receive a message from it, but the message is there if you look hard enough. And with the Traumatized series, I believe it's going to expand into three books, and I believe the Night the Jack-O-Lantern Went Out series, that will also be a total of three books. But at the moment, Cerinthia Falls is not available online, and I only have three copies on me, which those will probably sell next weekend when I go up to Chattanooga. But I ended up pulling Cerinthia Falls from the original publisher, and pretty much there's one or two people that I have in mind that are going to be looking at the manuscript. Since this is going to be a reissued book, I want to try to entice the fans not only to buy it again, but I want to entice the fans to have more of an interest in the backstory of this town. Because with this book, it is going to be the first book of seven books. And what I did...
I'm so excited. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Pretty much with the reissue of this, it is going to have a intro that was not a part of the original book.
Ooh.
And it's going to probably be about a good 20, 25 pages long. I'm almost done writing it. But it's going to give you some insight about the town before the actual Cerinthia Falls story starts. One of my favorite books is The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. And one of my favorite lines in there is some houses are born bad. And that line has always stuck with me. And I decided that with this series, since the main character is the town itself, I want to go all the way back to the beginning before Mississippi became a state and show how this land was born bad. So with the new intro, you're going to get an insight into creatures that will be in each book following Cerinthia Falls. You'll also get insight into the areas in which they're infamous for. And so this is all just going to be a setup. And if people didn't want to read the setup, that's fine. Just skip the first 20 pages and start reading Cerinthia Falls. But for those who want to know what's in store, they're really going to have to read this additional segment. And as far as the sequel goes, all of my notes have been compiled. Cynthia Bonner was one who was very adamant in letting me interview her, and also quite a few others for that matter. But with the first book, it does focus on more so white suburbia and also trailer areas for white people that are either middle class or lower class. And with the sequel, since I'm jumping around in each area of the town with each book, the sequel is going to be more so based around the African American community. And it is still going to stand as a strong horror story, but at the same time, it's going to shift visions. And I didn't need to add this into the first one. As I'm doing the revision, it was already there. But there's actually a few characters who are name dropped for no more than maybe just a sentence or two in the first book. And some of those name dropped characters are the main characters of part two.
Ooh, nice. That's nice. Good. It's like little Easter eggs.
I know.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so excited that there's going to be seven. When you said seven, I just wanted to squeal.
each book is planned to focus on something else, such as the first one, as I said, lower class and middle class, white America and also suburbia. The second one's going to be more so the African-American community. Third one, Latino community. Fourth one will be GLBT. The fifth one will probably focus a little bit more on persons who have come to America, immigrants. And
like Asians?
Yeah, well, yes, Asians.
And the Irish. And the Irish and the Italians.
Exactly. It's going to be more of kind of a stew pot about immigrants specifically coming to Havensburg. And as the books progress out, the sixth and seventh book, they're going to have to tie together as a stew pot for everything.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting to see how you can pull it all together.
I'm super excited. Now that our listeners have actually heard that, you know, Cerinthia Falls is pulled from the old publisher and it's not available online, we want to go ahead and jump in and say that we are giving away as contest to promote Alex's book, his next book, Traumatized 2. We have been giving away his three books, The Night the Jack Lantern Went Out, Traumatized, and Cerinthia Falls, to our listeners. And we're super excited to... Cerinthia Falls is kind of like our last book that we're giving away. So if you're interested in getting that book and entering the contest, you'll want to go ahead and give our show, you know, later a couple more listens, since that's going to be one of the books we're holding on to for a while.
And I just want to say thank you for doing the contest. And when you reached out to me and asked for the books, it was really an honor to be able to sign those, especially Cerinthia Falls, and get it over to you.
Yeah.
I think my main heartbreak about going away from the original publisher is the cover is going to change when it is re-released, probably in about a year, maybe a year or so at the most. It just depends on what this publisher is going to be able to do in that time. Since the book is already edited to near perfection, it's really not going to take that much there, but as far as a release date, I really don't know yet. But my main heartbreak is that the cover will change. And that was created by a dear friend of mine, James Powell, who had been killed in a car crash. Aww. So that's my only real heartbreak. But at least I do still have one copy here with that original cover.
Now, when talking about, you know, publishing, dealing with the, you know, going through a new publisher with your traumatized, or doing a new publisher or publishing a new book, is the most challenging part is that back and forth process of editing it, revising, and editing it again, or is there a different challenging part of the process?
I would say that the most challenging part of the process is me doing my own edit before it gets over to the publisher. And the reason why I say this is because just about every sentence could be reconstructed a million different ways. And so with me and my ADD, I'm normally sitting at the table with my fidget spinner and I'm vaping and I have, you know, water, because you can't edit while you're drunk. You can write while you're drunk, but not edit while you're drunk. And so me departing with the baby, such as the manuscript, sometimes I have to be told, hey, get off the pot, send it over, you've sat on it long enough. And that's kind of what had to happen with Traumatized 2, because I was just going over it again and again and again. And the publisher's like, Alex, I know you're writing, you're good, send it over. We have editors here, they'll take care of the rest. And
right, and you're just grasping onto it like, no!
Yes. And so I really have to give him a pat on the back for that, because sometimes I don't know when to stop. But with the edits that the publisher provides with his editors, that's actually an easier part of the process, because I have a new set of eyes looking over it. And when they read over it and send me the corrections in red, it's very negotiable. It's not anything like, okay, well, you can't do this because it's not going to be what mainstream wants. And if I went with a mainstream publisher, I would have that binding where I would have to bow to them. And with Prose being a large house, but not a mainstream house, it does grant me that creativity. And as the years have progressed, I did start off where the goal was to get to a mainstream publishing house. But then as I had spoken with other people who had dealt with them and also pretty much sold their soul to the devil, you know, I pretty much am happy with where I am. And I would rather stay where I am versus having to mold my vision to fit the mainstream.
If you had the opportunity to rewrite one of your works that's already published, what would it be? Or are you satisfied with everything that's actually published?
Well, I am pretty satisfied with everything that's published. I would say this much, and it's not necessarily something that I wrote. I did contribute a story to them. But I would really love to see some of the Southern Haunts kind of tweaked a little bit. With those anthologies, I went in with a partner, and pretty much, you know, we agreed. We worked well together, but at the same time, there were just some aspects of it that I felt kind of broke the better stories apart. And so that's my only thing. And I'm not saying that the authors who contributed are bad authors or anything of the sort. We really did pick people who had great talent, but as I read over the books now, there's just some where it's kind of like, maybe that story should have fit in another anthology. So it's not a bad, they're not bad stories, but you know, me being the perfectionist I am, I'm just like, that should have been in another anthology, we should have done another one. But I really had to pull back from doing the anthologies because I was faced with, I can continue editing and compiling anthologies while my personal work goes on the back burner, or I can focus more on my personal work. And so I chose my personal work. And as a matter of fact, on my website, I'm not contributing short stories to anthologies anytime soon because I'm focusing on my pure material.
That's good. We don't want you to be like George R.R. Martin, and then we're like, hey, when's the next Game of Thrones coming out? We want you to hurry up and finish all those Corinthia Falls books. Like,
yeah. Don't promise us seven books and only give us five.
Yeah.
Yes. No, you'll get the full seven out of me. And that was just the main thing. As much as I loved doing anthologies, as much as I loved collaborating with other creators, and very great creators at that, it's so time consuming, and you're faced with that choice.
All right. And then what tool do you feel are the must haves for a writer?
References. I feel that, and I mean, of course, if you're a writer, you already have like a laptop or a pen and paper. So we're just going to say you already have that. But the number one thing that you must have are references. Even if you are writing a fictional piece and you're going to get descriptive in what you do, you need to really research that subject. and you need to get the anatomy of it right. You just can't go into a story, even if it's a slasher story, and you have someone getting their leg cut off. If you're going into the detail of that severed limb, you need to be knowledgeable that in your leg there's a major vein. It will cause you to bleed to death very quickly. So unless your character is bound to bleed to death right there, you need to have some ideas of how you can prevent that from going further. And with my work, I do a lot of historical research, especially in folklore. And when I write a story, it is inspired by stories that have been handed down to us. But I also want to give a new aspect to it, such as in Cerinthia Falls, tea was the weapon. Well, in Haiti, you had people who believed in werewolves, like back in the ancient days, and they would purge their bodies with brews of teas or kind of homemade coffees, in a sense, well, land-made coffees, I'm sorry. And I had not known that until I had read it. And so if you're going to create something that's has been used in repetition, you definitely have to seek out information in other parts of the world to make it your vision and also to build on it so it is something new.
That's very true. I would agree with that. When I do my own little bit of writing, I feel like there's a time when I was like, oh, I really need to research what happens in a hospital because there is a hospital chapter and I need to know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. And the thing is, don't just stop at reference books. Continue with reference information online. Speak with people who are nurses, doctors. Interview them. Get the nitty-gritty from the horse's mouth. And be sure you have at least three sources. May it be interview, internet, book, even documentary DVD, as you know, even though some of the stuff on History Channel is pure crap now, but you know, just try to get as many sources as you can for the subject that you're writing about.
For editing, do you feel that when you take it to the publisher and then they edit it and then they give it back to you, do you feel that there's any major changes to it where your voice is lost and then it no longer becomes your project, it becomes theirs?
Not at all. No, that's not been my experience with any of the books that I've written. As a matter of fact, with the editors that Prose has provided me, and even when I had Cerinthia Falls with Dark Oak Press, the editor who was provided to me there, they were people who allowed me to keep my voice. And as a matter of fact, they gave me suggestions on how I could make my voice stronger. I always take constructive criticism to heart, meaning that I don't run and cry about it. I actually sit there and think about the issue that they're presenting, and I try to push myself. I try to better myself. I don't want to just stay stagnant in the voice that was like Alex at 19.
That sounds pretty good that you're able to evolve with the editors, and you're also able to make your voice stronger with them. I also dabble in writing too with Nisa, and I'm always worried that if I ever do get to that process, like, I'll be stripped when I get to that point. But I guess it's like, if I ever do feel that way, it's probably just not the best editor for me, and I just need to find a better one.
I think that perhaps for you to maintain your voice and also to have your voice molded for it to become better with each book you produce, I really think that people should search out small or medium houses. I've stood by this since day one after I had my fiasco with the original Traumatized before Prose picked it up. I had turned to a publishing house, and it wasn't a publishing house, really. It was just, hey, pay us $2,000 and we'll print your book. That's not a publisher. It's just a printer disguising themselves as a publisher. Okay. They really don't offer any sort of levels for you to advance at. They don't offer anything for you to grow mentally or verbally, especially in creativity. But if you go with the smaller medium house, you will find there are publishers who are willing to work with you more, and they provide editors who are willing to work with you more. And if you're simply willing to listen to the constructive criticism that's thrown your way, you're not going to experience what has happened with a lot of the mainstream, where you get an editor that says, nope, we got to strip it all from the beginning. This is the voice you're going to use. Here's how you're going to mold some of the characters. And very few people in the mainstream actually have that freedom of creativity. You literally have to be an A-lister to have that freedom of creativity, where you could say, you know what, screw you. I'm keeping the voice, I'm keeping the characters, I'm keeping everything the way I want. I'm going to go and do this myself or find another publisher. Other people in the mainstream, especially ones who are just now starting, they don't have that ability. They have to bow to what the mainstream publisher wants, which would be the big, big houses.
And then my final question would be, who is your favorite serial killer?
Fictional or real life?
Either one.
All right, well, I'll give you two. Real life, it would be perhaps Ed Gein. And the only reason why he's my favorite is because I find his psychology interesting. I really find it interesting that he was so early on and labeled schizophrenic before everything else came. And he inspired multiple characters like Hannibal Lecter, Leatherface, Norman Bates. So I find him to be the most interesting. As far as fictional goes, I'm a Michael Myers guy.
Strong silent nice. Type too, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so I got a couple questions for both of you. Are both of you born and raised in Mississippi?
I am.
I am as well.
Now, did you guys only live like an hour away? It's always weird that, you know, you live in the same state, you were born in the same state, but you're only now connecting with another, you know, individual who's like-minded as you.
The thing is, I believe fate brought us together. I really do. And the thing is, even though we are as expanded as what we are with social media and conventions, there's still, you know, the gems out there that haven't been discovered yet. And even if you're in the game for like 5-6 years, especially with being in the underground, a lot of times you really don't discover one another unless it is by social media. If it's not by that, then it's by word of mouth. If it's not by that, it's conventions. So we're constantly meeting new people who have always been in Mississippi or surrounding areas, and they've been in the game for quite some time. So there's always creative sorts out there that we're just stumbling upon now.
If you could work with another horror enthusiast, who would you choose?
Cynthia, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, Cynthia can go first.
Me? I think I have a specific person.
There's not a big name out there that you, if you could, choose to collaborate with in a project?
I like work with a lot of people, to be truthfully honest. It's not just one. I'd rather work with a lot of people. I want to get different aspects in the media in any kind of form. I want to work with all kinds of people.
Is there another makeup artist that you look up to that you would want to collaborate with?
Tom Savini. Savini? I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, Tom Savini.
Yes.
Is that the one from the Dawn of the Dead movies?
Yes.
That's
played
what I thought.
Sex Machine up at
Sex Machine is from Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, you can be his prodigy. And Alex, how about you?
Even though I like to experiment with quite a few different things, my number one passion is still writing horror and collaborating in that sense. Mine would be an author, of course, and I would have to say Clive Barker.
Nice choice.
I've always admired him, and sometimes I still like to pull this out just to brag, but when I was a kid and realized that I had the passion of writing and I wanted to pursue this as a serious profession, I wrote Clive Barker as well as quite a few other authors. And Clive Barker and Dean Koontz, they actually wrote me back. And they were actually signed by their hand, so it wasn't like just a printed signature or anything of the sort. But Clive Barker perhaps gave me the best advice, even though both of them were just absolutely wonderful for what they did. His advice was to always push the envelope and outdo yourself. And I've taken true to that advice. I've really tried to push myself beyond means, not only in a fictional subject matter, but also a social subject matter. He's more so my vision. I mean, he's been in the mainstream a little bit, but now he's really just a strong cult name, and that's what I'd like to work with.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and step into imagination land. Let's say if you were to meet your twinner from another dimension, what do you think their passion would be other than what you're doing right now? Like if you had to live another life, what do you think you would be doing in that life?
I think I'll probably, mine's about to be an artist. Some would still doing something, dealing
like
with
painting.
Yeah, because I started off as an artist, to be truthfully honest. I started off just drawing everything. I love drawing people, animals, fruit, everything. I drew.
So if Cynthia did not find the makeup and the fun that makeup had, you would still be doing like drawings and art?
I think I'll probably still be doing it. Other me out there still doing art.
Would it be still with a horror theme, or would it be with a different theme?
It'd probably be a different theme. Probably Everything all sweet and cute and stuff.
Do you ever get people asking you why you do horror instead of doing like cutesy makeup tutorials?
Sometimes. I was like, I'm the horror girl. I love the horror. That's the more interesting one to me.
Right.
I just can't. I'm sorry. I don't like. I like the other part, but it's just not as interesting as horror.
It's not as fun. It doesn't give you that rush. How about you, Alex? If you were to meet your twinner, what do you think he would be up to in the other dimension?
Well, I think that he would stick to writing, and with you mentioning different lives or, you know, previous lives, like reincarnation, maybe. Mm-hmm. I do believe in reincarnation. And over the last year, really, I've discovered an outlet that I'm actually not too bad at. I kind of have to toot my own horn there. I think that my twinner would be a poet. The reason why I say this is because I've recently in the last year gotten into spoken word poetry, and I consider myself, when it comes down to that, as being a confrontational artist. I think that perhaps in a past life, maybe I was at some bar or something like that, getting drunk off of absinthe, and that was the result of it. I think that in a past life, I was a poet, and I think that it does translate over into when I do my spoken word.
Do you think of yourself more as Keats or as Edgar Allan Poe?
Truth be it, neither really. When it comes down to it, it's more so kind of like a slam poetry in a sense. But at the same time, there's a rhythm to it. It's heavily explicit. And if someone were to simply just listen to me doing spoken word for the first time without really knowing me, they would probably think I was a very angry individual.
So are you like that 1950s, 1960s type that stands in, you know, in front of the brick wall and then does it, and then at the end everybody snaps their fingers?
Yeah, but the word fucks a lot in there, so.
We like explicit content.
Yeah, we do.
But I really try to focus on things that are important with my confrontational work. I try to focus on self-mutilation, suicide. I try to also focus on past relationships that were abusive, mentally, physically, sexually even. With the spoken word poetry that I do, it's not something that is intended to depress people, even though it can be depressing as we're going through the beginning to end. But with each of the poems, I do try to end it in a sense where there is a form of self-liberation and a form where you can achieve satisfaction. You can achieve self-pleasure.
That's good. You don't want to get people riled up and then just bring them on a down note. You want to kind of get them riled up, t- take them on a little journey and then, you know, bring it up at the end.
Exactly. And I want to do it while I'm staying true to speaking of issues. I don't think I'll ever get into doing it about politics or religion, because pretty much my philosophy on it is, I think for the most part, people are well-meaning. They just sometimes don't know how to direct themselves with their philosophies. And so I don't want to do it in a sense where I'm putting anyone down politically or religiously. But I do want to focus on issues that we internally go through.
But you want to still, like, keep it personal so that you're not technically offending anybody. Like, if somebody gets offended, you can be like, no, this is my own personal struggle. Stay out of it.
Well, I mean, yeah, people are going to get offended over it. And I mean, it is something that is very personal. But also at the same time, I've had quite a few people who I've read it to say that they could relate to it. They had been there before. And senses that were abusive from yourself or other individuals.
Mm. A few questions regarding mean spirited.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you normally do social messages with your work, Alex, but do you incorporate any social messages in regards to your work, or do you just kind of just do it for the art?
I do it for the art, because if they see something in it that speaks to them, I let them do it with their own imaginations and stuff.
Okay.
But I just do it for the pure artness.
So you're pretty much just like a blank slate that they can incorporate their thoughts on within your own art form there?
Yes.
Okay.
That's me right there.
And then how about you, Alex? I know you put your own in there, but do you also like people to make up their own minds as well, or do you hope that they get the message that you're sending out?
I want people to make up their own minds, even if they do disagree with me. The one thing that I do disagree about that I see so much of is people not really thinking for themselves. And even if you do disagree with me, that's fine. We can still sit over a cup of coffee and discuss it or other things, because I don't think that we should limit ourselves. I think we should try to understand one another and try to discuss more. I think that one of the main problems with the world now is a failure to communicate. Mm-hmm. And so that's really my thing with it.
So, Cynthia, for you first, do you prefer PG or R with your makeup? Like, do you find it more challenging to do, you know, kind of like a more guarded, or do you love just having that expanse to just go right in and then be horrific?
I tell people right now, you ain't gonna find nothing PG about my style.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but what I mean is, like,
I know I can offend some people with some of the stuff I be doing. So
yeah, I know. I know. This is probably more for a question for Alex, I meant, but like, have you ever tried anything that was a little bit more PG and then less risque, you know, and then seeing what kind of challenges.
Some of my stuff is like that. When it comes to my daughter, yeah, when I do things with her, yeah, I tone it down.
Yeah, okay.
When it comes to her, but other than that, me, or if somebody requesting certain little things, I try to be a little PG, but I like pushing the envelope.
Let that big flag fly.
We all like pushing the envelope.
Most expressive that way. Like, I can really express myself, because most of my looks I do is my comfort. It's like, it helps me get through whatever I'm going through. Like, if I'm sad or I'm mad, I'll just pick up my brush and just go at it. So most of those looks you get is coming from my emotions. So
they're pretty dark emotions there.
They're pretty dark emotions there.
I think we all got the little dark part of us. I'm able to
express you all there. Scary. And then Alex, same question. In moving from PG to R, what do you find it? What do you call it? More liberating, or do you find yourself constricted more?
Truth be it, even when I'm doing a PG rated work, I don't find myself being restricted or feeling that sense. Pretty much, the work just kind of calls for itself. When I do a R rating, I just go all out. I go as far as my imagination can take me. And even with the PG work, such as the night the jack-o'-lantern went out, I do still allow my imagination to take me there. But at the same time, it allows me to create something for a younger audience. And that's also a drive with me. I think that too many kids today might not be able to enjoy the holidays like how I did growing up. I noticed, like, for Halloween, when I was a kid, just about every house on the street was, like, decked out, and you even had, like, the spooky guy house where you wouldn't want to go there to get candy because he creeped you out so much. And now that just really doesn't happen. It's almost like the spark is gone from so many subjects for kids. And so when I wrote The Night the Jack-o'-Lantern Went Out, I knew I wanted it to at least be suitable for 13 and up. And just having that drive of being able to create something whimsical for a younger generation, I didn't find any trouble with it at all. It was just sitting down, diving right into it, no differently than an R-rated piece.
You know what, when you say that it feels like the spark of Halloween is kind of, is not the same as it was when we were kids, I want to say that it almost feels like it's because our culture here in the U.S. is becoming more and more sensitive.
I do agree. I very much agree with that. And, I mean, a prime example here, I mean, when I was a kid, 5, 6 years old about, our church would have a Halloween party in a haunted house. Now, this wasn't the kind where, you know, people would dress up like Mary and Joseph and come dressed as that. And they wouldn't do a hell house where you would walk through and feel like you're going to hell because you didn't live up to some expectation of their philosophy. It was a legit haunted house. You go through, there were vampires, werewolves, people chasing you around with chainsaws. It was a good kind. And as far as the Halloween party itself goes, I mean, you had people dressed up there from, like, old school characters to contemporary characters. And it was just fun without, you know, being so ridiculed for simply indulging in the holiday.
How people get so politically correct, you know, our holidays kind of get stripped now. And then it's nice that Alex is trying to, you know, like, bring it back to where, you know, it could make it actually cool again. Because, like, you see all those movies where they're all like, oh, holidays are so lame, you know, or it's Halloween again. What are we going to do? We're not getting free candy unless we beat up some kid.
My philosophy about political correctness is pretty much just simply respect one another. I mean, sometimes there are, you know, jokes and such that might be hurtful to some, but the thing is, if you simply respect each other as an individual, a joke is a joke. Some of my favorite jokes were told to me by straight people about gay people, and then I can, like, go right back at them and, like, throw off some jokes about, like, rednecks or whatever, and a lot of them are more so white collar, blue collar. And, I mean, it's a conversation where we have grown into that sense where, you know, if someone calls me something, it's in a joking manner. But even if someone did it seriously, I mean, a name's a name, whatever, my life's going to continue and I'll probably never see you again.
Right. All right, let's go ahead and get into some Halloween topic. So let's go ahead and take turns. Let's talk about the first subject is 3 things you love to do or like about Halloween. Cynthia, you can go first. If you want to list 3 things that you absolutely love about Halloween.
I love the Halloween costumes, most of all. I always love eating. I actually don't like when people... just throw my dislike in there real quick. I don't like when people be normal things on Halloween because that's like taking a whole like holiday and like just like, okay, really? It's really? You're gonna
dress up as a cop? Right? I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I really truly hate when people do the cop or the nurse or the something normal.
Yes, that's like not good. I want you to be all creepy and scary and stuff. That's my thing. I love the Halloween costumes. I love the haunted houses. Even though I'm finna drop y'all expected, I've never been to a haunted house, but I work at one.
Oh yeah, really? Wow. So hot costumes, haunted houses, and then what would be the third one? That's your favorite?
The scary movies.
Scary movies, yeah. Nice.
When I can go find a good scary movie, it's not the new things. I like the old horror, like the stuff, Night of the Demons, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Night of the Demon, oh. Yeah, I was watching that when I was like 9 or 10, and then
Killer Clowns.
Yes, Killer Clown from Mars. I love the 80s movies.
Oh, yeah, they're a gem. People don't understand. When watching movies like that, I don't think a lot of people understand. They're looking at the quality of what's happening, and they're comparing it to what we have nowadays. They're not actually soaking in the fact that this was what it was in its time period. And yeah, it was an art. So, yeah, I also enjoy watching old horror movies.
I would have to say my top three. And a lot of people don't consider this, but I would actually say the togetherness that Halloween brings. It's something where, you know, kids get together. They bond over trick-or-treating. They bond over Halloween parties. You do have parents who walk alongside them down the street to get candy and such. So you have that bonding experience there. And the second thing, I would have to say it's the time when the veil is its thinnest. I know that sounds cliche, but it's true. And I really enjoy doing seances every year. We've successfully done seances for the last 5 years through an Ouija board. And you have to know how to work it, because if you don't know how to work it, you will have something nasty come in. But as long as you understand the technical side of it, you should be fine. And over the last 5 years, we've been able to speak with loved ones. We normally invite one or two people who have never done it before on Halloween night. And it's people who normally need closure. I call my kitchen table the table of tears, because every time we do a seance, we normally have either one or both individuals break down in tears. And it's a very cleansing process. It's a very happy process. It's not one that's frightening or mournful at all. But tears do come when you know for a fact you are speaking with your loved one. The third aspect that I love of Halloween, and this one's not as deep as the others, but I love the horror movies.
Ooh, just like the King.
Yes, and more so the old school ones.
So are you like into the Universal horror ones with like Bela Lugosi, or are you talking like the older like 1980 ones as well?
Really any of those. Some Halloweens I'll put on a silent film like Nosferatu or Haxan, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Mm-hmm. Other times it'll be like Rosemary's Baby, The Omen, sometimes Freddy Krueger, Jason. I just love all of those where it's, as you had mentioned, the art really goes into it. And that's not when people had computers they were yanking out and doing it behind a desk. Those were times when people were really putting their blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Exactly.
How about you, Frosty? What are your three favorite things about Halloween?
Trick-or-treating, but I haven't done it in years because the kids are gone, and then I'm obviously too old now.
Well, you look 12, so you could probably still pull it off.
Not with these tits, no. Yeah, everybody says I look like I'm younger. I'll get told that sometimes when I'm walking around like a high school or something. They'll be like, get the class, and I'm like, fuck you.
I'm a 30-year-old woman. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. So I really like the candy. I mean, I'll go out and I'll buy my own. Like every time I see them pull out that Halloween candy, I'm like, yes. I'm like, it's the time has come. I'm gonna buy me a big old bag and then pretend it's for trick-or-treaters. Gonna have to do movies as well. I love, like, when they come out with a new horror movie, you know, like, for the couple months or whatever before Halloween, you know, like, when there's something new to watch that's specifically Halloween-based. Like, I just saw this trailer for this one movie called American Satan that's got Malcolm McDowell in it, and that looks pretty good. I want to see that. And then, the third one, probably the Halloween TV shows. Like, you know, like how they'll come out with an episode of a TV show that's Halloween based or something.
Oh,
I like how they try to, you know, like buy into it and then be like, okay, so it's Halloween on Supernatural, so we're bringing Dracula back or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt with this. I can't remember if it's already come or gone. I hope it hasn't gone yet. But there's supposed to be a Michael Jackson Halloween special. And it's supposed to air this year, but I really hope I didn't miss it. If I did, I'll get it on DVD.
Now I have to look for that too. All right, so for my three, I'm a little more cutesy because I really like seeing babies and puppies in costume on Halloween. I don't care about the little kids. I like seeing the little babies in costume and the little puppies or when people dress up their dogs. I mean, like, I don't like it when people dress up their dogs all the time, but I, on Halloween, there's a purpose. So I like seeing little dogs in costumes. I do enjoy candy, a lot of it. So I would say candy would be one of my top three. And then I love watching horror movies, but I like watching horror movies all the time. But specifically to Halloween, I would say I really enjoy doing, like, the 31 Days of Halloween on ABC.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing all those kids shows. Now, speaking about babies, do we scare them or do we not scare them?
Scare them.
Scare them.
Scare them.
They gotta learn sooner or later.
Okay, we're all say scare them here on the Halloween special.
It'll make them stronger individuals for the long run.
Exactly.
Make that 6-month-old baby cry. What is the one candy you hog for yourself and not give out?
I'll live it.
Don't come to Z Queen's house. She does not have any candy.
I sure don't.
The lights are off. The porch light is off. That means there's no candy here.
Z Queen, just dress up and when they come up to your door, scare them and take their candy.
I know. Give me your candy.
Reese's. I'm a Reese's connoisseur, so that is it. If I could live off of nothing but that, I would be a happy camper for the rest of my days.
You know, I would agree. I hog all the Reese's. When it comes to trick-or-treating Halloween candy, that's like the candy I refuse to give out. I like have it like stockpiled on the side, you know.
I love Reese's too, but I actually gotta go with Twix. Like that's my all-time favorite. And every time we get that, I'm like, no, mine. And I remember one year I got so pissed off because there was like a needle hole in one of my Twix candies that I got for trick or treating. There was like a, I don't know, like somebody put a pin in it or something. And Yeah, my mom was checking my candy, and then she was like, she's like, you can't eat this one. And I'm like, why not? And she's like, because there's a hole in it. And then, like, we opened it up, and then legit, there was one that, like, popped through the wrapper and the candy. And then I'm just like, you son of a bitch.
Why you gotta ruin it for everyone, you know?
My candy.
Wow, you actually experienced one of those horror little children candy stories. You know, we as a kid, you always heard of those people who would put needles in candy or razor blades and stuff like that. And actually, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's just a myth. It's just a myth. But it actually really happens to people.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, Frosty, it happened to you.
Yeah.
And that is very true. I mean, you have to be careful. You have to be careful as an adult. You have to make sure that your kids understand how to be careful. Because, I mean, even though Halloween is a great time, it's a fun, joyous time. There is, of course, the darker side of it. And if there wasn't the darker side there, I probably wouldn't have been able to write a book.
Yeah.
If you could, if you had an abundance of money, what would be your dream costume to create?
If I had the money to buy an awesome costume, it would be the classic costume from Queen of the Damned.
Oh, Queen of the Damned. You would look amazing in that.
Oh, my God. I'm going to challenge you, Cynthia. You need to do a Queen of the Damned look.
Oh, man.
Body paint that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
There you go. Paper and gold leaf or something.
That's going to be hot. Challenge accepted.
All right.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. We will be watching your Instagram now more than ever. More than ever. I would say werewolf, like a legit good looking werewolf. And when I say good looking, I don't mean like Twilight. No. I mean like American werewolf.
Yeah. American werewolf. The big werewolf head and body.
Yes.
The moving jaw.
Yes.
With the jewel coming down. Oh, that'd be crazy.
Don't stop until one of those six-month-olds start to cry.
How about you, Frosty?
I'd probably go Claudia from Queen of the Damned. I loved her little blue dress and her curls. I want to be her so bad.
Nice. Mine would be doing the real stereotypical like witch, like a Baba Yaga.
Ooh. God, it's been ages since I've heard Baba Yaga. I'm so glad someone else is still talking about that. That's great.
Oh, yeah. I would do a classic, you know, ugly, warted, big nose, full prosthetic, crazy hair, you know, that old Russian-style clothing. Go all out. Does anyone have plans for a costume this year?
I will be something. I don't know what that something is, but it will happen.
I know last year you said you were going to be a werewolf.
Yeah, I went as that, but I was very generic about it. I just put on a flannel shirt and had the little werewolf ears and hair, and that was about it.
Huh. How about you, Cynthia?
I am going to be at the haunted house. So I don't get a chance to really just, like, do the Halloween anymore because I'm always at the haunted house, like, during October, and then on the October 31st, I'll be there, too.
What are you playing in the haunted house?
Well, they gave me a character called Zegan. It's a shape-shifting demon.
Oh, nice. I like it.
So that's my character there. I'm a demon.
Well, me and Frosty are still kind of on the ups on whether we're going to do... Last year, we did the DC villain girls, so Poison Ivy, Catwoman.
Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Harley Quinn. This year, it was a toss-up between Hocus Pocus.
And Powerpuff Girls.
So we're still kind of deciding.
Hocus Pocus.
Oh, no. Already decided.
I know. We need to make a good Winifred.
If I was there, I could be the zombie for y'all.
All right. All right, let's get into our Would You Rather game. So first question, would you rather turn into a vampire or a superhero?
I would say vampire.
I'm a vampire.
Frosty, are you a vampire too?
I'm a vampire superhero. I'm an angel.
No, that's not the question. The question is, would you rather be a vampire or a superhero?
I'd be a vampire superhero. Angel with a vampire and a superhero. I can take out Alex and Cynthia because vampires. See? There you go.
I would actually really enjoy just being a superhero.
You and me team up. We have an unlikely friendship because I'm a vampire, and then we take out these two.
Right. I'm not too fond of the immortal idea, so yeah, that's why I would choose superhero.
Well, as far as the immortal idea goes, I mean, if you ever got tired of it, you could just step out into the sun.
Right, that too. But I like being out in the daylight too. So I can't.
I don't like I it. Can't live. I like being in the dark.
Yeah, I can't be in the dark. Okay, so another one would be, would you rather walk through a graveyard at midnight or spend the night in a spooky abandoned house?
I would say a graveyard for you.
Cynthia said graveyard?
Yes. I would say a haunted house.
Spending the night in the spooky abandoned house. How about you, Frosty?
Well, I've already walked through a graveyard at midnight with you, so
different. And that is and true.
The house.
So you would stay in the spooky house.
Yeah.
You know, if Frosty's going to stay in the spooky house, I'd do the spooky house with her. Would you rather read a spooky story or see a spooky movie?
Spooky story.
I would say spooky story.
How about you, Frosty?
Spooky story.
I would also say spooky story, even though I enjoy really watching spooky movies. I think your imagination is more, can run away with you when you're reading a story instead of watching a movie.
Yeah.
Because you ever have one of those movies where you're like really into the moment and then it's just a bum?
Yeah.
They could have done this better moment.
Babadook did that to me. They were building it up, and then when I actually saw the monster, I was like, what? Like, that's it?
Right.
I know. That's why I like to give yourself goosebumps, because you was in control, and I loved it.
I would say, as far as movies go, since you had mentioned about the letdown at the end, Apollo 18, that did that for me. I was like, really? Rocks? Okay, whatever.
So would you rather have a costume that is really amazing, but also very uncomfortable, or have a costume that's not anything at all that special, but it is comfortable to wear?
Uncomfortable and awesome.
Uncomfortable and awesome for Cynthia.
Uncomfortable as well.
How about you, Frosty?
I have done the uncomfortable and awesome, and I would do it again because compliments make you feel way better than...
I'm also that narcissist as well. I will suffer for the art.
Yeah, exactly.
We all have that same view. All right. Would you rather have to sleep in a coffin or have to live in a giant pumpkin?
Coffin.
Yeah, a coffin would be pretty comfortable. The pumpkin would eventually rot.
Yes.
How about you, Frosty?
Can I be in a coffin in a pumpkin?
No. Oh. You have to choose either or.
Then pumpkin.
You know what? That's funny because I would also choose pumpkin as well. To be in a big pumpkin, big enough to fit me.
Yeah, that's an experience. Half down.
And you can put stuff, you can line the walls with something for it to stay solid.
Yeah, you can spray on, what's that stuff that hardened shit? Lacquer?
Yeah.
Lacquer all through the walls?
Hey, and then you could get high.
Wasn't the pumpkin like a coffin anyways, like that Peter pumpkin eater had a wife and couldn't keep her? isn't that a coffin? Didn't he kill her because she cheated on him? And then he put her in a pumpkin shell, which is technically a coffin.
Right.
So it's both technically.
Would you rather have to eat 6 fish eyeballs or have to eat a small frog? Ugh. So eat 6 fish eyeballs or have to eat a small frog? The eyeballs or the frog? Eyeballs. Okay.
We're going to make the eyeballs small. They'll belong to sardines. We're going with eyeballs.
How about you, Frosty?
God, I'm going to go eyeballs too, just because I don't like the idea of eating a whole frog.
Yes.
But you know frog legs is a delicacy in France, right?
Yeah, but you know what else? They have dishes in Japan where they cut up a frog in half and he's still alive while you're eating it and he stares at you while you eat his bottom half. And
why are the Japanese that why do they do that?
I don't know. They're statistic and that's why they have the lowest crime rate is because
they take it out on their food apparently. Well, I would also have to say the 6 fish eyeballs as well because I can't imagine eating a whole frog.
Yeah, but you know what I'd do? I'd put the eyeballs in chocolate. And then I wouldn't know. Like, like I
did. Good idea.
You know what's funny is in the Filipino culture, they actually eat the eyeballs of the fish because it's got vitamins in it.
Everything's got
vitamins.
Well,
see, there's a perk already.
Right. It gives you a lot of vitamins.
Yeah, no, I'm going to put it in chocolate and then eat them like Advil.
Yes.
Let it go down that way. Like, I don't even think.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring 6 fish eyeballs so I can see you do this now.
What? All right, I'll get the chocolate. Are we going to do a show or something?
Right. Remember that Would You Rather?
All right.
Next one would be, would you rather help design and make a haunted house or go to the best haunted house, which someone else has created?
I would like to help do it.
Help do it?
Yeah.
I would also go with help do it. I think I might could pull off a twisted one.
Yes. Make it happen.
How about you, Frosty?
I would just go to one.
You go to the best one.
I just go to the best one. I don't want to help.
You're like,
I'm not a team player. I'm like, scare me.
Right, I feel the same way. Even though it would be fun to create a haunted house, it sounds like a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather go enjoy the best one. Next question would be, would you rather be chased by 5 zombies or chased by 1 werewolf?
5 zombies.
5 zombies. Hopefully we're talking about, you know, classic zombies that don't run.
At least I have somewhat of a chance.
How about you, Alex?
I would take the werewolf.
The 1 werewolf?
Yeah.
You probably know how to kill him anyway. On your research.
I would probably try to befriend it and introduce it to my enemies.
Make it into your pet? Come here, doggy. Yeah. Come here, doggy. How about you, Frosty?
The zombies.
The zombies.
I'm on the 2nd floor of an apartment, so... You know, they have to get up the stairs and then they have to bang on the door, you know. So it's like I could hide in my bathroom and be like, la 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 la, I'm not listening.
That's the worst thing that you could do is trap yourself in a small room.
Well, then I could trap myself upstairs in my apartment and board up my window and then just be like, that's nice. You can keep doing what you're doing. I'm not opening the door. Mark, get away from the fucking door.
Go to the neighbor. They always eat at all-you-can-eat buffets. Go to them.
Yeah.
They have more meat on them. I would say the werewolf because I'm also like Alex where I'm like, come here, puppy. You're going to be my puppy. You're going to be my new best friend.
Let me introduce y'all to my friends.
Right. Right. Okay, and last question. Would you rather dress up as a devil or dress up as an angel?
Devil.
The devil.
Frosty.
Devil.
I think we're all in the same boat where we're all dressing up as a devil this Halloween. That was the end of our last segment. So, Alex, if anyone wanted to check out your own works, how would they follow you?
Pretty much if you go to my website, www.alexandersbrown.com, it will bring you up to everything I have. And this is books, free videos, places where I'm going to sign. And also there is a page where you can hook up with all of my social media and also my blogs. So if there's a social media site out there, I'm sure I'm on it. Just click on my website and it'll take you to it.
Awesome. How about you, Cynthia? If anyone wanted to check out your works, where would they go?
You can find me on Facebook. It's Cynthia Z. Queen Bonner. I'm the only one. I have the horror picture as my profile so you can spot me. And go to my page is The Queen Sin Effect. And on Instagram, you can find me at The Queen Sin. And on Twitter, you can find me as Cameron The Art Eye, too.
Now, Z Queen, I didn't get to ask this question, but is there going to be tutorial videos for you?
Yes. I'm always doing like little tutorials on Facebook. So every now and then, I would do a tutorial like I did one for that Pennywise one. So. Oh. Yeah. I like to put
but no,
little
YouTube channel.
No, yet. Not yet, no but it is yet. Coming.
Awesome. We'll definitely be on the lookout for Z Queen's YouTube channel, yeah. So you can see tutorials and her works on there. We'd like to thank both of you again for coming on to our show and celebrating Halloween with us at the club.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me back. It's always a pleasure to speak with y'all. I hope it becomes a Halloween ritual for us.
Right. This is not the last time, Alex, we'll be hearing from you or Z Queen again.
Yeah. Yay. I thank you guys for having me, and sorry about this phone.
Oh no, you're fine.
Ooh.
At this time, we would like to thank you for joining us here at the Horror Club. Please feel free to like our Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, like, comment, and share, because we just love. And if you really hated your time with us today, sorry, we're not sorry.